The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. And welcome to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live this evening, send her an email in studio101@gmail.com. And now, broadcasting live from Studio 1A of the Beaver Valley Media Group, right to Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, Gary, and welcome to everyone to Down the Garden Path. Thank you for joining us this evening, where every week we discuss and talk about down-to-earth practical advice for your garden, plants, and all things landscaping. And, of course, my favorite topic of landscape design when I can. And pollinators. Pollinators seems to be a big topic for us lately, so I'm really excited to continue on that theme this evening. Our gardens are continuing to have a slow start this spring. Our temperatures still are pretty cool here in the GTA.
Yeah, what's going on?
I don't know. I'm hoping it picks it up. But plants, you know, patience is, testing the gardeners right now as to be patient.
Yep.
And
yep.
To enjoy everything before it all hits. As soon as it heats up, we're going to hit the ground running. So everyone, there's not too much yet to, aside from a little garden cleanup, there's not too much to do. Some dividing of perennials if you so choose, but pretty much it's a slow start. So this evening we are going to expand our talk. We have talked about pollinators in the past. And tonight we are going to talk specifically about the monarch butterfly, which along with being a pollinator has a wonderful story that goes along with it. It's such a fascinating story. And I'm being joined by Kylie Bomley, who is going to tell us all about it. So I'll tell you a little about Kylie. She is well into her second career as a garden writer, as well as being a registered dental hygienist for the past 39 years. An indoor gardener since her college days, she also tends to an acre of land in rural Northwest Ohio. She's the co-author of Indoor Plant Decor, the design style book for houseplants, chosen by Amazon as one of the top 20 books of 2013 in its category. She has also written the award-winning gardening blog, Our Little Acre, for the past 9 years. A member of the Garden Writers Association and the American Horticultural Society, Kylie has been a contributing writer to many publications. She also has a regular column in Ohio Gardener magazine. As a gardener, Kylie enjoys trying new things in her gardens and in the past has grown rice, peanuts, cotton, and crepe myrtles in her Zone B location. She trials plants every year for several companies and welcomes the challenges they sometimes bring. Using organic gardening practices, biodiversity plays a large part in the success of her gardens and their popularity with pollinators of all kinds. Kylie is passionate in her love of monarch butterflies in particular and believes backyard gardeners can help reverse their decline in number. And that is what I'm really looking forward to discussing with Kylie tonight. Welcome to the show, Kylie.
Thank you, Joanne. I'm happy to be here talking about one of the things that I am most passionate about.
Excellent, excellent. Well, why don't you tell us about your journey that led you to the monarch butterfly?
Well, like most people in North America, the monarch is the most recognizable specific butterfly, and we all can remember when their numbers were a lot greater. You know, as we were growing up, mm-hmm. we kind of took it for granted that the monarchs are here. They're always going to be here, but we have seen their decline in recent years. And it's just now, you know, in the last several years, it's come to everybody's attention that there's a problem. Why are we not seeing them? Well, I first got really passionately interested in them about 10 years ago. In 2006, my mother and I took a trip from where we live in Ohio to the East Coast, and we stopped at the Flight 93 Memorial Site, and we were in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, there at the memorial, and when we got back in the car after walking around, they mm-hmm. had like a little garden area there. Mom had this monarch butterfly in her hand, and she said, "Look what I found," and it was dead, but it was in perfect condition. Mm. And then she noticed that it had a little sticker on it. And it was so tiny, this sticker, maybe, oh, I don't know, maybe a quarter of an inch in diameter. And it had writing on it and an identification number and a place where you could go online to, you know, investigate what this was about. So oh. when we got home, I did that and found out that this tag was from Monarch Watch, and it's the University of Kansas. They put these stickers out that people can put on monarch butterflies in the fall when they're migrating. This was September when we found it.
Okay.
When they're migrating, and that will help them track the migration to Mexico. So that's when I first found out about the Monarch Way Station program, and it was only a week later that I actually got our garden certified as a Monarch Way Station.
Wow, that was fast.
Yeah, I just fell for them. The whole migration story, everything to about them fascinated me, and so I just kind of jumped in with both feet, and that's how it's been ever since. I have just been so passionate about them. They're fascinating. There's so many miraculous facts about them that
right.
people aren't aware of.
Mm-hmm. So that one that your mom found, where do you know where it was originally tagged? Like how long?
Well, I turned in the number. I reported the number. And at that time, since it was fall, they did not yet have the numbers for that season that had been tagged. And I have not yet since been able to find out where that monarch was tagged for some odd reason. I'm going to be persistent though here in the next few weeks and try to find out where that monarch originated.
Wow.
Obviously it didn't make it to Mexico.
Yes, for
sure. But you know, there are a lot of them that don't, but there are also a lot of them that do.
Yeah. Wow. So many people might not realize that whole process that happens with the monarch butterflies migrating. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That's true, because most people think that the monarchs that we see in the summer have made the entire trip. You know, the year before in the fall, they've flown all the way to Mexico and then they fly back, mm-hmm. and that's not the case. The monarchs that are born in your gardens in, oh, let's say maybe beginning to middle of August, from then on, that's a different generation of monarchs than what you see in your garden in the spring and in midsummer. The ones that are born at that time of the year generally do not mate. They have one mission, and that is to get to Mexico.
Wow.
And that's 2,800 miles away, depending on where you live. And those monarchs
did we lose
Kylie? Are you there? Oh, we'll call her back. I don't know what happened.
Oh.
Yep, there he is.
Oh,
there's a disconnect.
Goes.
We lost signal. So we'll call her back.
Yeah. Do you want to do a commercial or get
No, I'll call her back first.
Okay,
so you talk.
Oh, I talk. Well, I think it's fascinating that you know, we've had many guests in the past talk about the decline in the bees and neonics and the importance of pollinators, you know, that all the bees do. So I think in addition to the fascinating process of the monarchs migrating to Mexico and back, I think it's really interesting to find out what they do as far as pollinators, how important they are. And so I'm really looking forward to talking to Kylie about that. And it's true, though, that we all recognize monarchs are so recognizable that, you know, it's a wonder that they turn over as far as reproduction wise and making the trek from Mexico to here. Kylie's back.
Kylie is back. Hello, Kylie.
Hi.
Did you pay your Kylie? Did you pay your cell phone bill?
That's okay. So you were talking about the trek they make, the 2,800 miles that they go from here to Mexico.
Right, and they spend their winter down there in central Mexico in the Oyamel fir forest, which is a really unique habitat for them. It's perfect for them to spend their time through the winter. They're not active, but as spring comes and things start to warm up, they become more active and they begin their trek back north. The amazing thing about that is that the ones that fly down there from here, from Canada all the way down to Mexico, have never been there before, yet they go to the exact same spot every year.
Wow.
And how they know where to go is, I mean, that's a miracle. It mm-hmm. really is. And so in the spring then, when it warms up, maybe the end of February into March, they begin to make their way back north. They'll get to southern Texas. As soon as they can find some milkweed, they will mate, lay their eggs, and then that generation dies.
Okay.
So that generation lives 7 months or so, give or take.
Wow.
But that's the only generation that does that.
Okay.
So once they get to Texas, to the southern part of the U.S., and they mate and lay their eggs, then they're done. They die, and then the next generation continues to go further north. They kind of follow the milkweed as it comes up. And so you can kind of know when to look for monarchs in your garden by looking at your milkweed plants,
okay.
where they are in their development,
okay.
because they need that milkweed in order to reproduce. It's the only genus of plants that they will reproduce on.
Wow. I still find it fascinating. So the ones that actually leave Canada in the fall, they survive, mm-hmm. they make the trek all the way to Mexico, then they survive all winter, and then
right.
leave Mexico and make it to Texas, and so they last that whole time.
Right, and they're pretty tattered by the time they make that trip. By the time you see those, you can generally tell which ones are the migrators when in Texas when you see them, because they're going to have the tattered wings, and you know when a monarch first closes out from their chrysalis, they're brand spanking new and perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But those ones that have made that track all the way there and have lived all through the winter, they don't look that good.
Okay. They're bruised and battered. And
they are.
Yeah, and then there's monitoring all the way, right? So in Mexico, that's how we've been able to know that the numbers are declining. That's one of the locations they've been able to, I guess, not really do a count, but I guess a count in a way, right?
They do. They don't count individual monarchs. They count them by the territory, by the land, the amount of land that they inhabit.
Okay.
They measure the hectares, which is what the unit of measurement of land that they have down there. Because when they're down there, they're hanging from the trees. They almost look like monarch trees. They're completely covered.
Wow.
They cluster on the branches and on the trunks of the trees. To stay warm.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are these biosphere reserves down there that where they go. And so they each year they take note of how much land those monarchs are inhabiting during the winter. And that's how they determine whether there's been an increase or decrease.
Okay. And is that kind of a tourist area then, or do they try to discourage tourists from looking?
No, it is a tourist area, and it's very important to the Mexican people because it's in an area of Mexico that isn't particularly wealthy. You know, they depend on that tourism to as a means of making a living. So it is protected. It is it's a world. Oh gosh, can't think of the name of it now. A world
heritage, like one of those.
And so it is protected, and they do monitor how many people go in at a time. But they do encourage people to come and visit.
Have you been?
It's very much an industry there.
Have you been?
I have not, and that is on my bucket list. And I actually thought I might be able to go this next year, like in January or February. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but I'm not giving up yet. I will make it there someday.
Yeah, for sure.
I know that I will.
For sure. That definitely sounds like a bucket list thing. That's for sure. I'm going to add that to my list as well, because I think that's fascinating.
I can't even imagine standing there and looking at all those monarchs. And I've told people, I know I will just sit down and cry. And that might sound silly, but one time here 2 years ago, we had a roost, an overnight roost during the migration, because where I live is directly in the line of where they pass through. And several times, two times actually, we've had roosts, overnight roosts in the trees in our yard. But 2 years ago, I got a phone call from my editor at the paper where I write a column, and she said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, nothing right now." And she said, "Can you go?" And it was about 3 miles from our house. She said, "Can you go there and take a picture?" We had a reader call us to say that she's got thousands of monarch butterflies in her trees. Well, of course, I jumped in the car and I ran over there, and it was the most beautiful sight I've ever seen. It was just humbling, and just to see those thousands and thousands of monarchs hanging there from those trees.
Wow, that must really be a sight. And what a coincidence for you to be in the path. That is, you know, for sure. For sure, it was meant to be.
It was.
Wow. So is it Mexico that has started to notice the decline? Is that where it started to become more apparent?
Well, that's where they're measuring, you know, by the amount of land that they cover. So that's the easiest way for them to count or determine. But the decline is enough that even everyday gardeners are noticing. You know, you hear people all the time say, "I never see any monarchs anymore." So, you know, the decline is enough that even people who didn't have an interest in it, like the scientists and biologists do, they're noticing it too.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking more about the decline. Why don't we pause there for a commercial break? And we will be right back to talk more about the monarch butterflies here on Down the Garden Path on Reality Radio 101.
Hey, Sally, your garden is looking great today.
Thanks, Gary. Your lawn is looking a little bit dry.
Ah, that's okay. It's all going to change. Soon I'm going to plant a fruit tree in my yard. I'm thinking an apple tree or maybe peach.
That sounds great, but do you know what you're doing?
Well, fruit trees are easy. You just plant them, water them, and wait for the harvest, right?
Actually, that's not quite the case.
What?
Organic orchardists spend a lot of time protecting their fruit trees from pest and disease problems.
Really?
And in order to thrive, fruit trees need to be pruned every year.
I didn't know that.
I'll tell you what. Before you buy your tree, why don't you go to orchardpeople.com? You'll learn lots about growing fruit from the blog, and there's a fantastic monthly newsletter with seasonal tips and reminders.
Maybe I should check that out.
Yeah. Then if you really want to move ahead, you can sign up for orchardpeople.com's beginner fruit tree care course.
So maybe I should hold off on buying my tree today?
You got it. The more you know, the better your tree will grow. Sign up for a free membership to orchardpeople.com today.
Are you currently looking for home, automobile, business, or life insurance and live in the Durham, Ontario region, but you are just not sure where or who to turn to? Relax. The answer is WO Insurance Brokers. WO Insurance Brokers offers personalized service with very competitive rates. We offer monthly payments as well as a claims guarantee, making your insurance needs less stressful. Policy discounts are also available too. So what are you waiting for now? Call WO Insurance Brokers at 905-436-9090. Visit our website at www.woinsurancebrokers.com for more information. Remember, when you need a caring and professional insurance brokerage, WO is for you. At WO Insurance Brokerage, we are your hometown broker. The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is strongly advised. Welcome back to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. To contact Joanne live, send her an email right now, instudio101@gmail.com. And now, right back to your host of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you very much, Gary, and welcome back, everyone, to Down the Garden Path. We are here with Kylie Baumley, who is a passionate gardener and a passionate about monarch butterflies. And we were talking, as we were wrapping up there before the commercial break, we were starting to talk about the decline that was noticed. Welcome back to the show, Kylie.
Thank you.
So when the alarm bells started going off about the monarchs, It seemed to be kind of almost a worldwide issue just because of the pure geography, right?
I don't know if it would be worldwide. I don't know if I would consider it worldwide. Okay. There are other colonies of monarchs throughout the world, like they are in New Zealand and Australia and Hawaii. And the monarch itself is not in so much in danger of becoming extinct. However, the eastern population, which is east of the Rockies, is the one that is most affected by the problems that are causing their decline, and it's a multifaceted problem. It's not just one thing. They, with the advent of Roundup Ready crops, that has had a great effect on them, and that happened in the mid-90s, and that's when we started to see the decline. But it's the use of pesticides, but it's also the fact that their habitat for sure is declining because, you know, milkweed is being destroyed. Farmers don't want it in their fields, and you can't blame them for that. But there are ways that we can increase the habitat by planting more milkweed, but that's just one part of it. There's also, they're at the mercy of weather events. They are, there's logging going on in Mexico, illegal logging in the area where they overwinter.
Okay.
That, you know, the Mexican government is trying to keep control of that. But, you know, those people are trying to make a living too. So, I mean, it's kind of a difficult situation. But mainly, as far as we are concerned here in North America, it is the decline in their habitat. So, you know, as more land is being taken up by urbanization and by farmland, then, you know, that prairie where the milkweed used to grow everywhere, you know, it's just disappearing.
Okay.
But we can make a difference if everybody would plant some milkweed, you know, that's going to help. It's not going to solve the problem, but cumulatively we can make a difference.
Excellent. So, you know, your typical backyard gardener can and there are different types of milkweed. I know sometimes it gets a bit of a bad rap in the sense of being invasive, but there are other non-invasive invasive varieties, correct?
Well, in North America, there are actually, trying to think here. There's 110 species of milkweed that are native to North America.
Okay.
But they're not all in the same place.
Right.
So there are places online where you can check to see what is native to your area. The Pollinator Partnership had on their website, they show what is native to each geographical area. And it's recommended that you plant what is native to your area.
Okay.
Monarchs are not that picky. If, you know, whatever they need, if it's a milkweed and that's what's available to them, they'll make use of it. But okay. They do definitely have their preferences. For instance, in my own garden, I grow four different kinds of perennial milkweed, but the one that they prefer is swamp milkweed. Well, that makes sense because where I live used to be the Great Black Swamp.
Okay.
So the monarchs that are, you know, when they get to our area, that's one that grows really well, and they like it. They like the common milkweed, too. I often find eggs on the common milkweed. I also grow butterfly weed with the orange flowers, and I have a yellow variety also. These are all native to Ohio, here where I live.
Okay.
And whorled milkweed, which is a really beautiful one. You wouldn't even guess that it's milkweed until you see their flowers. They have typical milkweed flowers, but the plant itself looks very ferny. It's got very skinny, almost needle-like leaves, but it's very soft and ferny.
Okay.
And I know the first time I saw that milkweed, I thought, oh, there's no way that's going to support a monarch caterpillar because they're ravenous eaters.
Right.
And I thought, gosh, there's not much there for them to eat. But it does. They will find what they need.
Excellent. And you are zone 5B in Ohio, and we are in most of Ontario is also zone 5B. I think our timing is we're a little bit behind you as far as how our plants are doing, but we can support the same plants.
Right.
So that is great to know. And milkweed is their source of food as well as where they lay their eggs, right?
Well, that is for the caterpillars.
Caterpillars,
in the larva stage. Yes. But if you want to attract monarchs to your garden, for certain you need to have the milkweed because you not only want to attract them just to have them be there, you want them to reproduce there too. You might as well see the whole cycle. So you also need to have nectar producing plants.
Right.
And, you know, things like zinnias, you know, all the pretty flowers that you grow in your garden, the more that you have of those, the better. Mm-hmm. That will bring them in also.
Okay. Yeah, all the same ones that are good for the bees, right? The other pollinators.
Right, exactly.
Which have also been so much in the news lately. And I think social media has done a really good job, I think, of spreading the awareness, don't you, of the decline in the
definitely.
Bees and the monarch butterflies. I think social media has really had a positive and really helped your average, you know, backyard gardener know that they can contribute, that they can make a difference.
Can you imagine trying to spread the word about this without social media now?
Yeah, I really can't.
I mean, we're so used to it.
Yeah.
We kind of take that for granted. But, yeah, it's a great way to get the word out.
Absolutely. So speaking of social media, I know I thoroughly enjoyed watching you on, quote unquote, watching on social media as you have to explain it to me. So I want to say you raised butterflies last year. You were, you know, certainly doing your part for the butterflies, and I really enjoyed your updates. So can you tell us a little bit how you got started, and would you classify that as raising butterflies, or is there a better term for that?
That's probably what you could call it.
Okay.
I don't do that in the early part of the season. The first time, I'm trying to think back, the first time I ever brought in a caterpillar and had it form its chrysalis in the house is probably back in 2007.
Okay.
And I brought the caterpillar in, and of course I Googled everything to find out what should I do. Was it even possible for me to bring a caterpillar in, and would it survive and form its chrysalis, and would the butterfly emerge or eclose is the proper term for it? Would it would it even do that in my house? And it absolutely did. And I will never forget the first one that I brought in. And I stayed up all night then when I realized that the butterfly was going to come out. There are signs that you know that it's about to happen. And I stayed up the whole entire night because I just was not going to miss that.
Oh, wow.
And it didn't happen until 7:45 the next morning.
Of course.
Yeah. And so they, you know, they come out, they're all crumpled, and they have to pump the fluid into their wings. Then the wings need to harden a little bit, you know, firm up so that they can are capable of flight. So, you know, it's within, I would say, 24, 48 hours that it can be ready to go outside. And so when we took it out and I had it on my finger and it flew away, I had a little feeling of sadness because that butterfly, it grew up in my garden, mm-hmm. finished its growing up in my house, and then it had to leave the nest.
Wow.
And I got a little lump in my throat when it took off, and I just said, have a nice flight, because I knew it was headed to Mexico at that point. It was in the fall. Yeah.
So then
last year was the first year that I really did it in numbers. I had always brought in eggs or caterpillars, but only one or two at a time. And last year in the fall, starting mid-August, I started bringing them in as both eggs and caterpillars and raised them in my kitchen and my living room in aquariums. I actually had four setups, but because I try to keep the chrysalis away from the caterpillars.
Okay.
Kept them separated. But in the end, I released 78 adult monarchs and tagged them.
And you did tag them.
I tagged all of them, and I took a picture of each one before they left.
Wow. And now, did you get the caterpillars from your own garden?
Yes. I went out, and I looked on my milkweed, and I found eggs.
Okay.
And I also found small caterpillars. And the sooner you can, if you're going to do that, the sooner you bring them in, the better, because there are parasites. And, you know, that take advantage mm-hmm. of monarchs and can kill the caterpillars. And so the sooner you can get them in and protect them from that, the better, if you're going to do it. But I brought in all stages.
Wow. It sounds like it must have been almost a full-time job.
It took a lot of time. But, you know, when it's something that you love to do, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. That's
and
true.
The neatest thing about that, too, was I have grandchildren, and Hannah is the oldest one, and she was almost three by the time I did this last summer, and she was absolutely fascinated by them. And if you ask her today, she'll be four this September, if you ask her today, if you show her a picture of the chrysalis, she will tell you that's a chrysalis. She knows a monarch butterfly by the way it looks, and it's amazing how young children like that can learn at such a young age, and hopefully, you know, she will enjoy them as much as I do, and she'll do her part one day.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think you have a little assistant on your hands then.
Yeah, and I have a grandson too, and he's two, and he was also pretty fascinated by it, so...
Wow. Yeah, I think that's the best way to inspire the next generation, because we need them to be passionate about it as well. Right. So that they can make sure that we're all taking care and doing and making sure that the butterflies and the bees and everything survives. Right. And excels.
Right. And that's kind of what I'd like to do with them, is just to show them and teach them how everything works together in the world.
Absolutely.
That it's important. It's not just a bug.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, do you think anyone could do that by bringing certainly I think you're unique in that you have that much in your garden. So obviously a well-established garden with quite a bit of milkweed. So you've got quite a variety of plants that sustains that many monarchs. So is it something that you advise, you know, just anybody to try to do, or?
I think everybody should probably have the experience at least once of seeing a monarch from egg to adult up close and personal like that. But even people who don't have much of a garden can actually experience that. A lot of schools will do this. They will bring in either a chrysalis or even a caterpillar and watch the stages. As long as the caterpillars have milk, fresh milkweed to eat, you can do it. And milkweed grows wild, you know, everywhere. The only thing you have to be careful of is when you're collecting that milkweed, you need to make sure that it has not been sprayed.
Right. Okay.
So that by growing it in your own garden, you can assure that it's fresh, clean milkweed.
Okay. Now, let me pause for just a second. We have actually have a question that has been emailed to us. And Chris is asking, besides milkweed, what is the absolutely best way to attract monarch butterflies? And this listener is in Los Angeles.
Okay. Well, as I was saying before, you need to have nectar plants. Obviously, you need the milkweed because they need that to reproduce, and they seek that out when if they're reproducing. But you also need to have nectar plants because that's what sustains the adult butterflies. And you have to have good, healthy adult butterflies in order for them to reproduce. So anything that, that has nectar, like I said, zinnias are a really good one. They love goldenrod. Asters, of course, those are in the fall. Those are fall bloomers.
Right.
But any plant that, that provides nectar will bring them in.
Okay.
And like you said before, anything that the bees are going after, the monarchs probably will too.
Right. So all the, you know, I think of the purple coneflower, the echinacea.
Yeah.
Yeah. The different salvias, that type of thing.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. That's great. Well, I hope that
answers your... There's a great number of nectar producing plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's important to let them get established, like to have plants... you know, to plant perennials and have plants that come back every year. I mean, I know you mentioned zinnias, but they're an annual, right?
Right.
So I think, you know, I think it's good for our gardens and for all the pollinators to make sure you're planting the correct perennials. And that's lower maintenance, too, for the gardeners, and that know that every year those plants will come back and be there for the pollinators.
That's correct, and you need to have something in bloom all the time, too. You know, certain plants have, especially perennials, have a certain bloom time. Annuals, we talk about annuals because they tend to bloom all summer, and so they provide, you know, the nectar for almost the whole season. But perennials can, too, but you need to have something that's in bloom all the time. So like succession planting, you know, each perennial has its season. So if you have a variety, not only is it good for bringing in the pollinators, it's also good as for biodiversity and pest control and things like that. I'm a big believer in the more things you grow, the easier it will be to control pests in a natural way.
Yeah, that's true. And you're right. I mean, as I tend to be a little bit on the poo-pooing of the annual side, but, you know, they certainly fill the gap, right? Because a lot of times, even when you're succession planting with your perennials, the weather can be a little uncooperative, as it is like the spring here in the GTA. And you know, a lot of bulbs are done, and yet our spring bloomers haven't really started yet. You know, so I know I've been kind of, I know it's been also on social media about not to kind of look at the dandelion in a different way, mostly probably for the bees more than the butterflies, because it's still a little early for the butterflies. But just knowing that those, you know, that that is a source of pollen for them, and it's not just a big bad weed, right?
Right. And you touched on that, too, about the season where we are right now. We're kind of in between with the weather, you know, where you are and where I am. The tulips are pretty well done, but yet the perennials have not gotten a good start yet because it hasn't been warm enough. But if you look at the milkweed is pretty much a gauge for the monarch specifically. Mine is just, it's probably only about 3 to 4 inches out of the ground yet.
Okay.
So as far as what's blooming now to bring in the monarchs, it's not as important at this point in time where we are.
Okay.
So by the time the milkweed is late to emerge. It's one of the later plants to show itself. So by the time the monarch or the milkweed is up and growing and getting ready to bloom, then you've probably got other perennials that are already in bloom.
Okay.
That will attract the monarchs too.
Yeah, and I know I did, I don't know that variety, but I know I did plant some milkweed in my garden, so I haven't been out to see if how it's doing, but same, it would be, you know, a little early. Most things are a little bit behind, so it'd be a little early. And
yeah,
but
early.
Our listeners that are in Texas or in the southern states, then that's something that they know that they can be on the watch for, right?
Oh yeah, cuz the monarchs are in Texas. In fact, according to Journey North, which is where I track where the monarchs actually are, you can go there and see a map, and people will report their first sighted monarch.
Excellent.
And as of right now, the furthest north that the monarchs have been spotted are in southern Illinois and Indiana. I see there's been a couple in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
None have been reported in Ohio yet, and none in Canada yet, but it's very early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but they're halfway up through the United States already, so they're on the way.
Wow, that's great. Already in Pennsylvania. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's take another pause for another commercial break, Kylie, and we will come back to talk more about monarch butterflies and their journey up to us here. So we'll be right back on Reality Radio 101.
Do you worry about your pet becoming bored at home alone or while you are at work? If you love your pets but don't have the time to walk and play with them, Corey Hamilton can help. Growing up with a never-ending passion for animals, Corey is up for any challenge to make your pet healthy, happy, and fun. With Corey's expertise, you'll never again have to worry about your pets being left home alone. Corey's company, Taking the Lead, will treat them like they are part of our family. Animal enthusiast Corey Hamilton loves anything with fur, fins, and feathers. Combined with her degree in biochemistry, your pets are not just in for some fun and play, but their needs are being well understood. Skip the guilt and let your pets enjoy their lives while you are rest assured in yours. For more information, contact Corey at 905-697-2788. That's 905-697-2788. Or visit us at www.takingthelead.ca. Remember, happy pets make a happy home. Have your comics seen better days? Maybe they need a visit to the Comic Doctor. Get your comics pressed and dry cleaned using the Comic Doctor's chemical-free method, which diminishes or removes unwanted dents, bends, spine roll, and other defects, improving the appearance of your books. Not only will they look great, but their grade and value will increase. This just in. The Comic Doctor is now an authorized CGC submission agent. Let us take the guesswork out of submitting your comics to the CGC for grading. Make an appointment with the Comic Doctor today. Check us out online at thecomicdoctor.com. Welcome back to Down the Garden Path with your host, Joanne Shaw, right here on Reality Radio 101. Send Joanne an email right now in studio101@gmail.com. And now, right back to your host, Joanne Shaw.
Thank you, Gary, and thank you, everyone, for listening to Down the Garden Path this evening. I hope you're enjoying our chat about the monarch butterflies with Kylie Baumley. Thank you for joining us again, Kylie.
Thank you.
So are you looking forward to watching raising more butterflies this it's kind of late summer, early fall?
Yes, I absolutely am. And each year that I do this, I learn more about the monarchs and some of the amazing facts about them. And, of course, you know, we're human and we make mistakes, but nature is pretty forgiving. And so I am going to do that again this year. I don't know if I'll – I mean, I have no idea how many I will do.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do as many as as I can and do, and can do justice, you know, with as time allows.
Right.
But, yeah, I am absolutely. I miss them when they're gone. I miss them.
Oh, now were you able to track the ones, because you said you labeled them? So when do they get somewhere that data is entered?
Well, none of mine were located or collected this year, but that doesn't mean that they won't be in subsequent years, because the ones that the tags that are collected in Mexico are from butterflies that have died. They do not take off of the live butterflies. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of sad, but it helps with tracking the migration.
Okay.
And if you go to Mexico, you'll see that there are lots of monarchs that die down there, and they're on the floor of the forest. And so the Mexican people go through those, and they will collect the tags, and then they're paid a small amount of money for each tag that they turn in. And so the numbers are collected, and that's reported to the University of Kansas. And so early this spring, I got a list of all of the ones that had been recovered. And I was hopeful, in a way, you know, that I would find one. I know that the Toledo Zoo had several of theirs that they tagged that were found.
Okay.
Yeah. And so none of mine were, but maybe that means that they made it there and they survived, and they were some of the ones that made it
to Texas
this spring.
Excellent. Now, is there someone collecting those in Texas?
Oh, I would imagine if somebody found one there with the tag, they would report
that they
number.
Would do that as well. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Wow. Fascinating. You know, just even that you have the ability to raise them from egg to adult and be able to tag them and track them. Like, I think that is such an amazing amazing natural phenomenon, really. There's no other way to put it.
Right. And it's not hard. It's not difficult.
Okay.
So
anybody can do it. So something that, you know, your average homeowner and gardener could do to help the monarch butterflies.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, you know, I'm not a biologist. I'm not an entomologist. I'm a backyard gardener who's passionate about monarchs. And so when I decided to do it, I just Googled. There's a lot of information there. There's a great Facebook group called The Beautiful Monarch that I would really highly recommend if people are interested in learning more about the monarch. Holly is one of the administrators, and oh my goodness, there are some fabulous photos, close-up photos of monarchs, and a wealth of information there as far as how you can raise a monarch inside your home, and about all stages of their life and the migration. It's an amazing group. It really is.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. That's great. So I hope our listeners will check that out on Facebook, and if anyone is interested. And I'm sure, considering you have your blog, I followed you along on Facebook. Did you talk a bit about this process on your blog as well?
Yes, and if you go to my blog, there's a search box up on the upper left. If you put Monarch in that, and it will bring up all of the blog posts that I've done over the last 9 years pertaining to Monarch.
Excellent. So there's a lot of advice there for our listeners who want some firsthand knowledge, right? Because it's nice to know, I know we can all, like you said, Google it or look at a book, but I think it's nice to hear it from someone who's just recently done it. So I think that is great. Are there other tips that you have? I can't believe the time is flying. aside from, planting milkweed as well as other pollinators in our garden, or not pollinators in our garden, which you call them nectar plants. Is there something else that the average home gardener can do to help the monarchs?
Well, those are the main things.
Mm-hmm.
And just to be very careful not to use any kind of pesticides, herbicides, things like that, because they're highly sensitive to those.
Yes.
And so we don't want to, harm them. And the thing with the monarch is, I always tell people, can the world live without monarch butterflies? Well, sure, we can. But the fact that the monarchs are in decline is only an indication of a greater problem. They're kind of the poster child for what's going on in the environment. And, you know, if they're declining and the bees are declining, something's not right. And so we need to figure out what that is. And so these are things that we can do, easily can do, you know, by growing the milkweed, growing the nectar plants, not using pesticides and herbicides. Those are things that aren't really that difficult to do to help them. But, you know, we can also help just by creating awareness. One thing I'm doing right now is in the state of Ohio, I'm leading the way for a special interest license plate to be created to benefit the Pollinator Partnership, which is the national organization. There's an Ohio division of that called Monarch Wings Across Ohio. So any sales from the license plate will go to benefit that. And the whole point of that is to create awareness of what we all can do to help the situation. So it's not a done deal yet. It has to be okayed by Ohio legislature, but things are in process, and hopefully we will get that created. So there's a lot of education that people can do, even if they aren't a gardener. You know, you can help with educating children or just your neighbor. You know, just by being aware of it.
And I definitely will find out some more information about what is happening in Ontario. I know I think we're a little step ahead in that a lot of our herbicides here have been banned in Ontario. So there's not a lot of, well, very little, you know, aside from maybe golf courses. Spraying happening. So I think that is has to have had a positive effect on, you know, the milkweed and the environment. But I promise our listeners I will kind of give an update and find out what else is happening in Ontario to continue to spread the word and see how Monarchs are doing here locally. So so thank you for telling us all about what's happening in Ohio. As we wrap up, is there anything else that you would like to promote or to talk about? I know your blog is ourlittleacre.com.
Right.
What else would you like to share with our listeners?
Well, I have written a book, and it doesn't have anything to do with monarchs, but you mentioned it at the beginning,
yes.
Indoor Plant Decor, and I am hoping to do another book soon, and I mean that's where we're in talks with that. That's all I can say about that.
Okay.
But I know there are a couple of questions that people commonly ask me about the monarchs, like how can, like sometimes people will show a picture and they say, "Oh, I've seen a monarch," and it isn't a monarch at all; it's a viceroy.
Okay.
And so the easiest way to tell the difference, because they're very, very similar, is that the viceroy is smaller, and it has much quicker movements with its wings, and it also has a straight line across the bottom wings, whereas the monarch, they're more in sections. I don't know. You can Google that to tell the difference,
okay.
But a lot of people don't realize that there are two different, they're completely two different butterflies.
Okay, so the viceroy is a completely different butterfly.
Right.
Okay. Excellent. So if our listeners spot one this summer in their garden, is there a website that they should go to kind of let somebody know?
If they've seen it the first time they see a monarch?
Yeah.
Yes, you can report that at Journey North.
Okay.
And that's the website that I was talking about where you can track the migration, but you can also report, and this is how we know where they are now, because people are doing that. They're reporting their first spotting of a monarch butterfly. And anybody can go in there and you know, put it down that they spotted a monarch butterfly in their garden. And the web address for that site is www.learner.org.
Okay, excellent. I'll put that on my Facebook page as well. And so so our listeners can to know to do that. So that is wonderful. And I hope that I can have you back because I'm excited about your indoor plant decor book. You know, that tends to be one of the winter, you know, we get desperate to talk about plants here on Down the Garden Path in the winter. But I've had many shows and I'm always looking for new spins and more to talk about. So I definitely would love to have you back, Kylie, to talk about more. I love the angle. I love the fact that it's plant decor. And not just, you know, we tend to do the whole, you know, which ones are easy to grow and which ones can't you kill and that type of thing. But it's
right.
nice to have, I love, you know, as a landscape designer, of course, I think it's important to I love the design aspect. So I would love to have you back.
And I would love to be back and talk about it.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you. So please, if you want to follow Kylie and her journey with the Monarchs this late summer and early spring, check out her blog at ourlittleacre.com. And you're also on Twitter and Facebook as well. Right?
Right.
Excellent.
Right.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Thank you for informing us and enlightening us and, to be honest, really inspiring us that we could do this at home and we could have such a positive impact on the monarch butterflies.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I love to talk about them, and hopefully people will look at them a little differently now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think so. And I think we learned a lot, learning just that amazing phenomenon of how they go from here to Mexico and back to Texas. And I just think that's wonderful. So thank you for educating us as well. So have
You're
a
welcome.
Great evening. And thank you once again for joining me down the garden path.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. What did you think, Gary? Did you learn a lot tonight?
I did, actually. What I am totally amazed with, and I mean this, I never knew this, that these creatures
yes.
go all the way to Mexico.
And then back to Texas.
How do they do that?
I know. And like she said, it's an absolute phenomenon that they know where to go.
Yeah.
You know, that is
it
instinctual
is. Yep.
In an insect. You know, they're
I
not
know.
A bird. They're not a mammal.
Right, right, right.
You know, it is really a phenomenal thing. And I've got to research some more about that place in Texas or
yeah.
place in Mexico. Because,
yeah, right.
Because I think that would be a very neat place to go. Absolutely.
Yep. It's amazing.
Yeah.
What you learn about nature.
Yeah, for
right.
sure. For sure. And, you know, so down the garden path here, we learn something new. And
all the time.
Yeah.
We learn
all
something
the time.
New.
All the time. And I hope our listeners enjoyed this show tonight. I know we had a fabulous show last week with
mm-hmm.
Melanie about the, she's
Absolutely.
A florist,
yeah.
farmer,
oh, yeah.
farmer florist.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
And she's a one woman operation.
No, well, she has her husband's
yeah.
help. So
but
for
when,
sure. Yes.
But they no are, big staff.
No,
and
no,
no big.
For sure.
Could you imagine handling all that? Especially.
No.
Getting those arrangements ready for the weddings
yes,
and everything that she
sure.
said she does.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my goodness. What
sure.
a bunch of work.
Yep. Yep. So so I do. I know the local farmers markets aren't quite ready to start up yet, but please watch for them. And I forgot to mention at the end of last week's show that if you're not anywhere in a small town near a local or smaller suburb or whatever, near a local farmer's market,
mm-hmm.
The Toronto Flower Market, started by my good friend Vesna's daughter, Natasha,
mm-hmm.
So she's done a great job for the city of Toronto to create this Toronto Flower Market. So she's contacted all those farmers like Melanie and brought them into the city for one Saturday a month.
Mm.
So that they also are the growers of all the plant material and they get to sell directly to the public at the specifically, you know, Toronto Flower
right.
Market. So
where is that?
This year, I don't have the address for it this year. So look it up. It moves around. It's on Queen Street East.
Okay.
This year. They're back on the east side. But check them out at torontoflowermarket.com. And this is, I believe, their fourth year. So Natasha's done a great job at promoting the industry, promoting Ontario farmers
right.
and local growers.
Beautiful.
And really coordinating everybody. And it's the first Saturday of the month. So this coming Saturday, which is May 7th, is
okay.
their first one for this year, for 2016. So please look them up. And and again, if you're in the Toronto area, it's definitely worth stopping down in that great area of the city and picking up some fresh flowers and speaking to local flower farmers. Please do so. And I know we've had, you can check out my past shows because we did have Natasha as a guest last year. So downtoearth.ca/blog. All my past shows are there. And if you have any other questions or comments or ideas for upcoming shows, please don't hesitate to contact me at joanne@downtoearth.ca.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So thank you once again for joining me down the garden path here on Reality Radio 101.
You've been listening to Joanne Shaw and Down the Garden Path with your host, the one and only Joanne, right here on Reality Radio 101.